I'm always lucky to be up on the stage here with such talented people like Doug with his poetry, and Tom's music. Next week, Patrick is going to be here, his music, and Angela is going to be up here on the platform. We've got so many talented people here. As Doug said, I want to talk this morning about the power of giving during this season of gifts and parties and goodwill and all that stuff. Of course, both you and I know that when a minister stands up on Sunday and talks about giving, what he's usually talking about is you giving and us receiving. I mean, that's kind of what the traditional people talk about, but that's not what I'm going to talk about this morning. Because fortunately, I don't have to. We have a number of very generous people in this center who support us very, very well. In fact, 20% of our members provide 80% of our income, the old 80-20 rule. We have enough people in this community who understand the principles of prosperity well enough to know that when they give generously to the places where they get their good, with this being one of those places, we get the benefit of what they have attracted into their life through what they learned here, and they get the benefit of what we teach. Now, that kind of giving works, and it does work because, well, it isn't about obligation or guilt or those kind of things. It's more of a symbiotic relationship, okay? It's not about giving back to God what is God's, as a lot of the traditional churches teach. It's simply the way that the universe works. Because giving and receiving are spiritually interconnected, completely interconnected, not just at church, but in every single part of our life. So the giving I want to talk about this morning is a little more general. I want to talk about giving as an attitude, giving as a process, and giving as a habit. Those three things. But if we do that, we also have to look at not giving as an attitude, a process, or a habit. Because, as with all spiritual laws, it works both ways. Both giving and not giving are simply choices that we make, and what happens in our life reflects the choices that we make. Because the universe, through spiritual laws that are always working, reflects back to us whatever beliefs or attitudes we put into it, either positive or negative. Either constructive or destructive. So if we choose not to give freely and joyfully of all the wonderful things that we have, whether it's love, money, time, energy, laughter, whatever it happens to be, anything else, the amount of those things that we have overall, if we do not give and share them, will not only not increase, what we do have will eventually disappear. It'll just slowly wither away. We won't be punished by God. It's not going to mess up our karma. We won't be visited by the ghost of Christmas past, all that kind of stuff, okay? We'll just discover that as long as we try to hang on tight to what we've got because we're afraid we might run out, we're not going to get any more. Because giving and receiving are a circular flow. They're not opposites, two sides of a spectrum. They're part of a flow that the universe adds to. So the more we allow to flow out, the more we allow to flow in. That's the way it works. Now, we talk about giving, but receiving. Let's talk about that for a minute. Receiving is nice, and most of us like receiving, at least to a certain degree. We like receiving love, as long as it's on our terms, okay? We like receiving money, as long as we don't have to pay it back, right? Okay. We like receiving compliments. Most of us do, though most of us do it the way Tom just did. I don't know if I'm that great. You are. You're really good, you know? Okay. But for some of us, example, and I'm not picking on him because I have the same issue, receiving doesn't come so easily. In fact, it's something I have to constantly work on and have for my whole life. I have to remember that just like I can't receive if I don't give, I won't be able to give if I don't allow myself to receive. I have to remind myself this. And I mentioned this early on because in order for someone to be a giver, there has to be a receiver. You can't have one without the other, obviously, okay? But we can't play just one part all the time. We have to take our turn at both because either one without the other makes us feel real empty. Now, a few of you, as I look around, probably three or four of you, are old enough to remember the original Twilight Zone episodes. Remember those? The black and white ones, 30 minutes long, very brief, kind of tacky looking if you went back and looked at them. Rod Serling would introduce it and everything like that. There was an early episode in the first year or second year, and there was a story about a gambler, and I can't remember who played the part, but it was some famous actor that you would recognize now. And it was a gambler who was very, very stingy, or shall we say ungenerous, in his time on earth, and he died. And he woke up in this fantastic, beautiful, state-of-the-art casino, and he was the only one there except for the people who were running the games and the dealers and all those kind of people. So from the moment he arrived and he walked in and everybody smiled and recognized him, every time he rolled the dice, he won. Every single hand of poker was a winning hand. Every spin of the roulette wheel came up on his color or his number. Every single time, he was living in the millionaire suite in this gorgeous hotel. He was eating for free at their five-star restaurant. And for the first few days, he thought that he was in heaven. He says, I have arrived. Everything I've ever wanted, I've got. But it didn't take him long to figure out that being alone and having no one to share his winnings with felt like hell. And by the end of the show, you realize that's where he was. That's where he actually was, okay? And then Bob Hope, the great comedian, one of my heroes, I wonder, he died about 15 years ago. I looked it up, but it doesn't seem that long ago. But he was known as a very generous man, but not just with his money. He was very generous with his time. Everybody knew him going overseas to entertain our troops with the USO, bringing actors and entertainers from all over the industry. And he used to say that the worst kind of heart trouble that anyone could have was to have a heart with no charity in it. It was a great statement, really, really interesting statement. He knew that people who fail to give are people who are possessed by their possessions. And there are a lot of people like that. But even more important than the act of giving itself, whatever we happen to be giving, is our attitude about giving. Okay, I said I was going to talk about it as an attitude, a process, and a habit. And our attitude while we are doing it. All right, or as I like to say about a lot of things, it's not so much what we do, it's the consciousness we do it with. That's what's important. Now, as we all know, there are a lot of different reasons to give. Sometimes we give because we feel obligated or because we're guilted into it. We've all had that experience. And not only does that kind of giving not do anything for us, it actually creates a negative relationship between the giver, the receiver, and the gift that passes between them. It creates an imbalance. That's why it's always better not to give at all than to give reluctantly. I tell people that here. If you resent putting money in the plate, don't put money in the plate. It's not going to help you. It's not going to help us. And if we're giving in order to receive recognition or praise, as a lot of people do, or to manipulate somebody into doing something, we may certainly be able to accomplish that by what we're doing, but we won't receive any spiritual benefit from it. All the different spiritual benefits. But then some people don't care. Some people have ulterior motives in giving. Quick story, a number of years ago, I was in Montana during the summer in one of the ski areas that are a lot of fun during the summer because you can hike up the ski lifts. And I saw one of the best examples I have ever seen of someone who decided to use giving in order to manipulate behavior. There was this gorgeous gift shop in the ski area, very expensive, whatever, that was having trouble with unsupervised children. The parents would come in with the children. Well, while the parents were browsing, the kids would run around and tear down displays and do all sorts of stuff, and the parents didn't pay any attention to them at all. So instead of being negative about it, the owners decided that they would reward that kind of behavior and see what happened. So they posted a sign prominently in several different places in the store, and it said, "To all parents, please note that any child not being supervised will be given a shot of espresso and a new puppy." Think about it, okay? So that's what they did, and the behavior changed immediately. Absolutely immediately. Of course, not all giving has an ulterior motive or a selfish motive. If we give because somebody is in need, which many of us do, or because we're taught that giving to the less fortunate is the right thing to do, that's not a bad reason, obviously. In fact, most people would say that's a very, very good reason to give, but it still may create an imbalance between the person doing the giving and the person doing the receiving. So the best reason of all for us to give, okay, is because we can. It's really that simple. It doesn't sound like much, but it's because we can. Think of what it means, though, by saying that. When we give of what we have, whether it's our time, our energy, our money, whatever it happens to be, for no other reason than to keep abundance moving, to keep it moving, we don't have to worry about where our gift goes. We just put it into circulation. We just put it into the flow, and let it go. We don't have to worry about whether it's going to be replaced. We don't have to worry about getting repaid. We don't have to worry about being rewarded for our generosity. We can give not out of a feeling of charity, but out of an awareness that the universe is abundant and that there's a lot more where that came from, okay? And that the abundance of the universe exists everywhere, including where we are at any given time. So when we do that, very interesting things happen. There was a prosperity class I was giving a number of years ago, and we had one young man in there, and he was telling a story on himself about when he had first started coming to the center. This is when we were over at the Woodruff. And when the basket came around, later on he reached in his pocket, and all he had was a $20 bill. You can see his dilemma, okay, because this guy was a dollar a week kind of guy when he showed up, okay? So he said he thought about going around, dipping around and seeing if he had any change in his pocket and putting that in, or just letting the plate go by and pretending he was on his phone or whatever it happened to be so that he'd have money left for brunch. That's what he was thinking. But then he figured, what the hey, it's only a 20, and he threw it in, and it passed on by. So after the service, nobody had seen him do this, none of his friends. He walked out into the lobby, and a friend of his immediately came up to him and said, hey, you want to go to brunch? I'll take you to the Ritz-Carlton for brunch, my treat. $60 brunch. Great thing. And that Thursday, when he showed up for class, he had a very different view of prosperity. Very, very different. He said that really affected him. It was kind of a breakthrough moment. Now, there are also a lot of different places we can give, especially during this time of the year. We were all getting requests in the mailbox from all sorts of different charities. Some of them have, you know, the hungry children on the front. Those tear your heart out. Or the cute little puppies and kittens that are people are trying to get rescued or adopted, whatever. Some of the requests talk about things like global warming or political causes. Some of them about stopping the spread of some dangerous disease or the rise of homelessness, all of which are very good causes. Some of us simply thank us for our support in the past and say they would welcome any additional support if we choose to give it before the end of the year. And just like many of you, I have my favorites. Okay, how many of you have at least three charities that you like to support? Great. Very generous group. My wife and I we support a child through the Cambodian Children's Fund, he and his family. We do that throughout the year. I've supported the Union Mission for many years. I get letters from them over Thanksgiving and Christmas. I support the Wounded Warriors, the vets coming back from the Middle East. I give to the center because I'm glad it's here. I also occasionally give to some close friends who happen to be in need. I give to some members of my family. And I don't really keep track of how much I give. I mean, I get letters back for tax purposes and that from the organizations. But I always kind of figured that if I've still got some money left, I'm okay. It's fine. That was just kind of my attitude. You know, as a friend of mine said many years ago, don't worry about money, son. You're young. They'll give you more. Okay? That's just kind of the way it works out. Now, I tell you this not to impress you with my generosity, because I don't really care if you're impressed or not. I'm telling you this because it was a real lesson for me when I got to this point, okay? I no longer get caught up in judgment like I used to over what happens to the money after I let it go. After I let it go, it's gone. I don't worry about the fact that the Union Mission is an extremely Christian organization because they do wonderful work for some people that really need it. I don't look at the moral implications of the war in the Middle East or the people who go to fight it. I look at the human beings that are coming back to us injured. I don't criticize the Humane Society for putting animals to sleep. I don't get upset that my sister will tithe 10% of what I give to her church, or that my brother will use it to buy alcohol. I don't worry about that stuff anymore because in the big scheme of things, none of it matters. It's not about that. Now, some people have problems with these things, and that's fine, but I no longer let it get in the way of the flow. It's all about the flow. You see, just like a lot of you in here, and I know many of you, I've been blessed with a certain amount of abundance in my life, but I always remember that it's not my abundance. It is my individual use of the universe's abundance. You get the difference between the two? It's not mine. It's my individual use of the abundance all around the universe. That's important to remember because I didn't have it with me when I got here, and I'm sure as whatever not going to have it with me when I go, right? I mean, that's very, very clear. It's here for me to use and to spread around while I'm here. That's all, while I'm here. I mean, money doesn't do anything if it's sitting in my pocket or my bank account or my portfolio. I love that word. You know, money is only worth something when it's moving. Only when it's moving. The same with a lot of other things we have to give. Now, I don't mean we need to give away all our savings and spend all our time, you know, working at a soup kitchen and all these other things. Those are wonderful things to do. Wonderful things to do. And I know many of you do it. But giving is not about sacrifice. Giving is about the flow. It's about letting things flow through us and to us. Flow, flow, flow. You know, most of us, the truth is, can give a lot more than we can. Than we do normally. I mean, Ralph Waldo Emerson, one of my metaphysical heroes, said, "Beware of too much good staying in your hand. It will fast corrupt and attract worms. Pay it away quickly in some sort." Great statement. I love it. In other words, all we have to do is to find a place or to find some places, okay, where we can make a positive difference and then give, not until it hurts, like some people tell us, but until the difference that we are making in that place is so clear to us that we feel the beauty and the power of what our sharing is doing, not just for them, not just for us, but for the world, for the entire world. Not from an ego place, but from a place of excitement, when we're excited to write that check or to make that contribution or to spend our time, whatever it is, okay, about the difference that one person can make and the recognition of what could happen if we all started doing it. That's what it means to give until we feel good. You know, it's interesting how many people feel good about giving leftovers. True, and I'm not talking about leftovers food. I'm talking about things like giving away extra things that we don't need, like clearing out the stuff in your garage or clothes or, you know, that orange leisure suit, whatever, giving it away because we don't want to wear it anymore, all that stuff. Those are nice things to do. I do it, Goodwill, Salvation Army. But the question is, what does that kind of giving mean to us? It's not a bad thing, but what does it do? What if we decided to instead, take this, to make giving such a major part of our life that it actually affected our lifestyle? Imagine that it actually affected our lifestyle. In order for that to happen, we would probably have to give up something that we think is truly valuable and important to us in order to do something special for someone else. Okay, that's what it would take. I mean, the truth is, most people in the world don't give enough to be even mildly inconvenienced. They really, really don't. As soon as the giving starts getting in the way of, you know, our schedule, our budget, our favorite restaurant, whatever it happens to be, we cut back. We cut back on how. And when that happens, giving becomes a residual activity, an external activity that we still do, but only at a level that doesn't interfere with all the other things that we want to do for ourselves. Now, I'm not saying that to make anybody feel guilty, because we don't do guilt here. Guilt is not a constructive emotion or a constructive process. Of course, if you like feeling guilty and choose to feel guilty, have at it, you know, but we're not going to put it on you, okay? You can do it yourself. But there are some things we are into. We are into personal responsibility, honesty, and self-awareness. We're into those things a lot, a lot. That's why if we continue to base how much we give on how much we think we have, we're allowing the appearance of giving to override the possibilities of what that shift in consciousness can do. There's a great line in the movie Good Will Hunting. Remember that years ago? Robin Williams was Ben Affleck, I think, was in it. Just great movie. And here's the line. It was Robin Williams, I believe. He said, "Some people never know how much they have until they discover how much they can give." Some people never know how much they have until they discover how much they can give. Our actions in life, including giving, but all our actions, are external demonstrations of what we believe in here. All of our actions are external demonstrations of what we believe in here. So if someone's actions are cheap, like a bad tipper, you ever been at the restaurant and one of your friends wants to tip like 2% or something like that? What does that action tell you about what they believe? I mean, if we want to know what we really believe about prosperity and oneness and our personal value to the world, all of which are important, we only have to look at our external behaviors and consider how they make us feel, because only generous actions reflect a generous consciousness. That's just the way it works. When we don't allow our material or spiritual resources to flow, what we're really saying to the universe is, I only have so much. I only have a limited amount, okay, and I have to protect what I have. But when we simply give without worrying about it in a reasonably generous way, just because we can, we're making an affirmation. We're affirming that there's plenty more where that came from and that we believe it. And the universe recognizes that affirmation. It recognizes what we believe and it responds abundantly, not just to us, but everywhere around us, because that's what the universe does. That's what it does. All right. Here's the lesson part of today. I always like to give you a little something you can use. So I know a couple of you are taking notes. You can start writing these down. It would be 1 through 5 if you want to outline it. Okay. There is a process that we can go through consciously, okay, a conscious process that adds power to our giving. And it's a lot like the process we use to teach affirmative prayer. So here it is. Are you ready? Okay. It starts, step number one, with the recognition that we live in an abundant universe. Very simple. We live in an abundant universe. If you don't believe that, there's no point in going any further. We have to be clear in our own heart, in our own mind, okay, that in this lifetime, there's plenty of love, plenty of money, plenty of time, plenty of energy, plenty of everything for everyone, including us. That's step one. That's what we have to believe. That's the foundation. And then there's the second step. We need to give abundantly, not because of who we are or what we have, but because of what we are. What we are, okay? Which is the individual expression of a loving, giving, abundant, and generous power that is everywhere that we are, okay? Because if we can't see ourselves that way, then there's no way we can create a space for the person that we are giving to be that way. Because that's how we help each other. We create a space for each other to give. When I give, I create a space for someone to receive. And when I receive, I create a space for someone to give. Next, number three, we need to do the deed, so to speak. We need to actually give something on the physical level. Thinking about it is nice, but nothing happens if nothing happens. Okay? So we need to take action on our belief in abundance in a way that kickstarts the flow, that really gets the flow moving again, in a way that sets the law in motion. And we need to do this without ego, without judgment, and without attachment. Step four, give thanks for the ability to give and the opportunity to give. Okay? Give thanks. All right. Give thanks for the joy that we feel in being a part of the creative process, and then let it go. Let it go. Okay, that's step five. I did it. I'm clear about this. I did the action, and you let it go. Okay, don't pat yourself on the back. Don't tell yourself how great you are. If the person or the organization wants to thank you, accept their thanks graciously, but then start looking for another opportunity to share. Because you don't start the flow just once. You start it here, you start it here, you start it everywhere you are in every part of your life. That's the process. That is the process, okay? There's an old saying in the Talmud. I know some of you were raised in a Jewish tradition. Hanukkah starts this Tuesday evening, by the way, if you have any Jewish friends. But the Talmud, which is the book of Jewish law, has a statement. It's great. It says, "One who gives should never remember. One who receives should never forget." Isn't that great? One who gives should never remember. One who receives should never forget. That's an excellent metaphysical interpretation of the thought process behind effective spiritual giving. What it means is, after we give, we forget about it. We release it, let it go. I already talked about that. But when the wheel turns, as it always does, and we become the receiver, or we need help, which we may, we remember the way the universe works, and we give back to the place where we got our good. We keep the flow moving. We keep it going. Our goal in all of this is to create a habit pattern. Okay, remember I said attitude, process, and habit, okay? To create a habit pattern that supports us and expands our life and the world instead of maintaining the negative habit patterns or the limited beliefs that the world is always trying to teach us. There are certain things in life that need to become spiritual habits if your life is going to expand. Giving is one of those. So is receiving. So is gratitude. So is honesty and openness and non-judgment, okay? We all know this. It's not a secret. We don't have to be told. We know this in here. And we also know that the only way to break a habit, if we want to break it, is to replace it with a new habit. That's what you do. 12-step talks about that. Every spiritual belief talks about that. And the only way to strengthen a new habit is to do what? Repeat it. Do it over and over and over. We can't do either of those things unconsciously, not in the beginning. We have to pay attention. First, we have to consciously recognize the old habit that we want to change, and then we need to consciously choose a new habit and then consciously repeat the new habit until it becomes unconscious. We do it consciously until it becomes automatic and we don't have to think about it. That's the way spiritual habits help us. Now, how do we know which habits need to be changed in your life? Well, you could ask your mother. She'll probably tell you. But the best way I know to figure out what parts of our life are not, the habits in our life that need to be changed is to figure out what parts of our life are flowing smoothly and what parts are not. It's really that simple. Where are we stuck? If we're stuck somewhere and it's not flowing, there's a habit that needs to be changed. There's a book called The Game of Life and How to Play It. It's a classic. About 100 years ago, a woman by the name of Florence Scovel Shinn wrote it. And she said this in the book. She said, all sickness is due to congestion and all healing is due to circulation. Very interesting statement regarding health. But here's how it applies to what we're talking about today. Giving, especially conscious, generous, and enthusiastic giving, breaks up congestion and increases circulation. It breaks up congestion and increases circulation. And not only does it increase the circulation in us, it increases the circulation in the universe all around us. You could even say that it puts us into circulation. That's what it does. People who like to give usually find themselves surrounded by other people who like to give. By prosperous, generous people, okay? Which is a great place to be if you haven't experienced it. For example, before and after our Sunday services, every single week since we started, there have been people helping to set up and people helping to clean up afterwards, okay? They're all volunteers. We couldn't do it without them. And I'm not going to point them out because they hate that. They want to do it anonymously. They love the giving, okay? They're giving of themselves. Their energy before the service is so real, so honest, okay? It's more powerful than what goes on in here sometimes because they're giving completely, anonymously, and generously of themselves, which is always the best way to give. I mean, the real strength of this community, if we want it to move, to go on, to have this place available to come to, is not based on how many people show up on Sunday morning, or how many people come to classes, or how much money comes in every month. Those things are all factors. They're externals. Our real strength is in how many people are willing to give of themselves, their energy, their time, their money, as volunteers, as contributors, all of that, in a significant way because they love this teaching and they love what we do here. That's what makes this place stay. I mean, the truth is, any community or any relationship that means anything to us is a place to practice giving and to practice receiving. And we've all got a number of those places in our life. For that reason, we do a great disservice to ourselves when we put a limit on how much we're willing to give and how much we're willing to receive. If we truly believe that someone or something is important in our life, we should be willing to both give and receive unconditionally to support it, Otherwise, what's the point in being involved? If you're not supporting somewhere, go find somewhere that you can support. That's the way this works. Whether it's church, whether it's a marriage, whether it's at work, in your job, same thing. You're not just working for a paycheck, or you shouldn't be. It's about giving and receiving at work, helping others, being a mentor, giving more than you're asked to do, all those things. We all need to find not just a place, but places in every single part of our life where our giving brings us joy and where we can do it with passion and make that place our own. And I'm asking you guys to consider this place as one of those places. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's take a moment. Just take a breath. A lot of ideas, a lot of thoughts here. Listen to the thoughts that come up in your mind from what you heard. Take those thoughts as your higher self speaking to you. Listen. I am grateful for all that I am able to give in this world, because what I give comes from what I have been given. I came into this world, as all of us did, with nothing but a consciousness. It was appeared to be enclosed inside a body, but my consciousness is more than my body. My consciousness is more than my brain. It's more than my memories or my thoughts. My consciousness is my overall awareness that I am more than I appear. I have gifts to share, as does everyone, and I give these gifts freely. As I give them, they expand. As they expand, I receive more. Others receive more. We all begin to form a synergy where we join together, not as people, but as one mind, one heart, without the illusion of race or gender or nationality or sexuality or any of these things. These are just illusions. Every single one of us is a powerful spiritual being capable of expanding the infinite abundance of the universe wherever we are. We can do that through work. We can do it through investments. We can do it through loving people more. We can do it through sharing our time with organizations and people that could use a little help. We can do it through receiving, allowing others to feel good about themselves by giving and supporting us. As we do this, everything shifts. As we do this, we look around and we see things change. We see the people that are around us become a different group of people, reflecting our consciousness. When we are generous, we attract generosity. When we are loving, we attract love. When we are at peace, we attract peace. But the flow, the circular motion of these things expands far beyond us and the people we are sharing with. It expands out into the world like drops of rain on a window, and as each drop touches another drop, they join together and get larger and move faster. This is the way life expands in the world. And I am grateful to be a part of it. I am grateful to participate in the world without fear, without limitation, without anything that denies the spiritual truth of who and what I am. I give thanks for all that I have been given and all that I have yet to give. I embrace these ideas, these laws, these truths as the truth for every single one of us, and I use them in my life. I make good choices. I give love wherever I can, and I accept all that I am offered. I release this awareness into consciousness, knowing that it is the truth for me and for every other person from this moment on. Please join me in saying, and so it is. Thank you, Tom. If you like jazz, this is one of the best jazz pianists in Atlanta, and he performs around town with some fabulous vocalists and trios and everything. So after the service, Tom's got information here of where he performs, so I strongly encourage you to come up and talk to him. Free advertisement. There you go.
But you didn't mention the Waffle House.
I didn't mention the Waffle House. No. Next week, I'm going to take an old-time religious phrase and make sense out of it. The title of the talk is The Word Made Flesh. Old Christmas thing straight out of the Bible. Patrick will be here doing some Christmas music, I'm sure. Monday evening's prayer works with Reverend Angela Harmon, our metaphysical or spiritual conference call. You can call in and connect with some other people. We've got flyers out there with the numbers and the contact information there. Every Sunday morning, we have our adult study group that meets at 10 o'clock. Great chance to share ideas with a few people, 10 or 12 people normal on a normal Sunday. We have our guided meditation here at 10:30 for 15 minutes, and we have our kids program out in the dining room, which is the main room out there. We have classes coming up. We've got class flyers out there. We're actually sharing classroom space with Spiritual Living Center of Atlanta out on the Access Road near REI. So we've got some trifold things out there that have a number of classes from some of their teachers. And Angela is going to be teaching a class on the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. That's something she does professionally, so that'll be starting before our first service in January, so make sure you pick up a flyer and get the information there. We have our Abundance Plus program. You'll see these flyers out there starting in January. Our practitioners are going to be doing that, and the explanation is all in there, but briefly, you take this flyer, which has a sheet inside of it. You fill out the sheet, which gives your email address and some information, and then you take this and you basically do an affirmation on prosperity throughout the month of January. This will be for January, and there'll be a practitioner who will be in touch with you based on this who will also be treating with you for prosperity. So just like our gratitude thing in November, this isn't about raising money or anything else. It's about raising consciousness. And so if you can't spend 30 days believing in prosperity, then forget it. You know? If you can't spend 30 days doing it, it's probably not going to change. But if you can spend 30 days doing it, you can spend a lifetime doing it. So I invite you to participate with that. It's a great exercise. No service on the 24th and 31st of December, but starting the 7th of January for the 4 Sundays in January, I'll be teaching the basics. Talked about that earlier, the basics course, and based on the first 4 sections of the introduction of The Science of Mind, the book by Dr. Ernest Holmes, which you can get online if you don't have a copy. Finally, we have the vote next week. So if you want to vote and in support of Dr. Bob Dean as my successor on April 1st, please be there or email us or let us know your wish in some way, shape, or form.